You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people. But somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast, with more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.
Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Hello, hello, hello. And it's Safety Wars for Wednesday, March 4th, 2026. How's everybody doing? Got a lot of material to cover tonight. We're going to be discussing a major part of one of my favorite books out there. Simple Sabotage. It's the old OSS manual from World War II that was written for people sabotaging the Nazis and the Axis powers. It was declassified in something like 2008, still valid today, except for like the how to sabotage a telegraph. But it's valid. We have some updates to some stories. The one story, they managed to issue a press release yesterday, but also the citations. It's not like the Biden administration where they give you the official paperwork, but it's there. Now you can figure out what's going on there with a lot of stuff. War news today, but we're going to kick this thing off with OSHA news, and we're going to review some of these stories today. We're going to do an update on that. By the way, if you were listening or watching last night, we were talking about the EPA press release on the finding a lab on the East Palestine case where the data was all fouled up. And, you know, all different types of ramifications. apparently that was a big story in the environmental world. Who I ran into today talking about it. Everybody who online, I got some messages. Holy crap! And blah 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 blah. And basically, there's an investigation going on what exactly the hell happened there. Gee whiz. Let's go with our update. We're on a different platform. We're going back to our original platform on here, at least temporarily, for a lot of this stuff. Now, the reason why we weren't on here, it was just a nightmare with some of the things, and it wasn't allowing me to play music, and, just very acting very inconsistent on things. Now, this was the original story here. Screen, share screen. U.S. Department of Labor cites Florida Petroleum Tank Services contractor after worker succumbs to injuries from exposure to toxic chemicals. The U.S. Department of Labor has cited a Lando Lakes-based petroleum tank services contractor for exposing workers to chemical and respiratory hazards after an employee was fatally exposed to benzene and toluene. Benzene and toluene. Yep. And when they entered a fuel storage tank at a Lake Worth work site. This is probably going to be a case study where we're going to talk about confined space entry in the very near future. And investigators with the department's OSHA cited PC Petroleum Contractors Enterprises with 12 serious and for failing to 12 serious violations for failing to develop and implement a written permit required space entry program, ensure those authorized to enter the space knew the hazards and signs and symptoms of exposure, and no atmospheric evaluation, no permit, no respiratory protection, proposed $60,242 in penalties. Here I have the establishment search thing here. Boom, 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 boom. And let's do that. Share screen. I'm doing a call and repeat here with this. So here we have the inspection detail. The Biden administration used to go out there and, used to go out there and release the whole thing, right? On their Trump administration does not do that. They're less into the shame game here with that. Why? I don't know. It's, they want to get along with everybody, I guess. Initial violations, 12. Initial penalty, $60,242. Here we have citation one here. It is 19-1-134. They did not have a written respiratory protection standard. That was $3,972. And then related to that were other 19-10-134 violations. Let's look at what those are. EO1, that is medical evaluation. No medical evaluation on the ability to use a respirator. And this is going to be changed in the near future with that. They already announced it in the Federal Register. With filtering face freeze respirators, you're not going to need them. However, if you have a tight-fitting face freeze respirator, you're going to need a medical evaluation here with that. No medical evaluation. No fit testing. That was zero. GU01A, what is that? Beards, right? Not employees with facial hair. Some kind of beard. I tell you what, people think about men with this, but there are also women out there that have facial hair with that, hormonal issues and everything else with that, and other medical issues. So don't think it's just exclusively men with facial hair. Respirators are not clean and disinfected, right? all this related to respiratory hazards. They could have very easily separated these out here. And here's the last one, effective training. What does effective training mean? Any idea what that is? Effective training is when you go out and OSHA will interview the employees often with this. That's one technique. How come you're wearing a respirator? How come you're doing this? How come you're doing that? Did you receive training? Did you, right? And it's a big, long thing. That's what often happens with these sorts of things. Next, 1910-146, that is the general industry confined space entry. And there are a whole bunch here. Let's see what those are. C04. Did not development or written a permit, written permit space entry program. Right, that was $16,500 there. Next one. Under the permit required confined space program, the employer did not develop and implement the means, procedures, and practices for entry operations. But no, including but not limited to verifying the conditions are acceptable for entry throughout the duration of that. So often what happens, right, and they exposed employees to benzene, toluene, and American 9505 unsaturated isophthalic resin. Now, they might have done initial things, or it might not have been continuous, may not have been all the way through. The whole thing. I'm going to digress with that story. I'm going to give people bad ideas on what to do. And the next one. Under the permit required confined space program required by 29 CFR 1910-146, the employer did not provide employees with communications equipment. That was another, right? All of these are 39,972. Except where we noted without the program. Under the permit required confined space entry program, the employer did not designate people who had active roles in operations. In other words, they did not assign an entrant, attendant, or supervisor. Here we have another one, permit required confined space. The employer did not develop and implement procedures for summoning rescue and emergency services. Next one. Before entry was authorized, the employer did not document the completion of measures in preparing an entry permit with that. And here is one for 0146F. The entry permit that documents compliance with this section authorized entry did not identify required information. So maybe they had paperwork, but not the, incomplete. Okay. The employer did not certify any training with this. Right? So no training. And that was another $3,972. Well, they just whacked them with everything. Just throw the whole standard at them. The employer did not ensure that all authorized entrants were trained to perform the duties. The employer did not ensure that all entrants knew the hazards that could be faced during entry, including information on the mode, sign, or symptoms, and consequences of exposure. Well, we're going to go and take a screenshot of that, because I tell you what, that's an important one. I'm in the midst of writing a safety plan on this for a client. And that would be a good one to call out. And KO3I, what is that? Each authorized engine did not use a chest or full body harness. So this is another one. Jim, are we required to use a full body harness? And the answer is yes, you are required to use one. Yeah, but we're gonna. But when the rescuers come in, they're just going to take it off. Well, that's up to them. Regulation says you're going to wear one because I tell you what, it's not. If we have to retrieve you, we're going to try to do a non-entry rescue with a lifeline. And if we're doing a vertical entry, we're going to have a lifeline attached to you. And the only way we can winch you out if there's a problem is if you're attached to it, because we're not going in if we don't have to. Non-entry rescue, the second most effective rescue. The most effective rescue is a self-rescue. Then non-entry rescue, and then we're going to worry about going in after you with that. And that's why we have to have a emergency response team there. All this goes in there, layers of safety, layers of controls with that. One thing that I would love to find out is, right, and they give you information like whether it was union, non-union, this and that, right, with this. I wanted to, how about the languages of these folks? That's not never in these reports. In other words, were they targeting? Was this company, then there was a language barrier in here with this? Are they, I'm not saying this company does it, but there are other companies that hire people that deliberately don't speak any English and don't understand what's going on. And oftentimes, and we talk about this with roofers all the time, where the roofers hire people who, and they say they're independent contractors. Therefore, OSHA doesn't apply. Therefore, we could send them in and do whatever. And guess what? Department of Labor just clarified that, what an independent contractor was this week. Go and look it up. There. They have a new policy, or maybe they're reiterating the old policy. But again, that is a relevant thing on there. And let's get back to this. Now, the next three violations, 17, 18, and 19, 3,972 apiece, have to do with HAZCOM, 1910, 1200, EO1 standard, right, with that. The employer did not develop, implement, or maintain at the workspace a written hazard communication program which describes how the criteria, blah, 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 right, with that. The employer exposed employees to hazardous chemicals such as, but not limited to, benzene, toluene, and Merican 9505 unsaturated isophthalic resin. I don't know what that is. Why don't we look that up on that? Probably cannot share the SDS on that online, but I can read it to you. Employers did not have safety data sheets, right? And for unleaded petroleum-based gasoline and Merican and other things out there. Again, not available to employees at the workplace. So if you're going to be exposed to this stuff, you have to have it available to the employees right then and there with that. And we have another HAZCOM, H1 violation. Employees are not provided effective information on training on hazardous chemicals before, at the time of their initial assignment, or whenever new hazard the employees had not been previously trained about was introduced into their work area. And again, no training. What were they doing? Structural repairs. My question would be, and this might be one of the things, was are they being cited under the correct standard here? Well, what do you mean, Jim? If they're doing repairs, what kind of repairs were they, and do they meet the threshold of construction and not general industry with that? Just one of the questions. So $60,000 plus on this. Again, this is all contested. If you look on here, you do normally, if you get into, especially with this one, $60,242, if you, when this gets contested, normally, they contest all of it. They just don't contest one little tiny thing. They contest everything on here because you only have 15 days to contest this stuff. according to no by law. And very, I mean, it's like winning the lottery if you're able to have them vacate that violation there, vacate that. It's 15 days. Now, what does that mean? If you are, let's say you get, first of all, you should be training your employees in OSHA outreach training, number one. Number two, you should be, in this case, right, you should be training them in HAZCOM, respiratory, confined space entry. Now, how do I say this nicely? Right? They have to be trained in all this stuff. You also have to make sure that they understand all this stuff. You also have to, when you hire them, you got to train them. Conditions change, you got to train them, and everything else. This is where you get, training is not a lot of money. This is where you get issues with, I'm losing my train of thought here. Sorry, folks. I've only been up about 15 hours at this point. There's no excuse for stuff like this. There really isn't. So they contest everything. You only get 15 days, right, to contest this. You can't contest three, and then you're a sore loser. You may lose them, or we're going to contest the other three. It all has to be one. And I'm going to recommend, once you start to get into anything other than a de minimis type of situation, get an attorney. Get an attorney every time, right? We like to think that as safety professionals, we can handle everything. Guess what? When you're dealing with a regulatory agency and potential citations and impact to your business, you have to get a qualified attorney. And believe me, that attorney should have some experience in labor law and dealing with the agencies there. Any of you attorneys or anything want to come out here and talk to us about that, I'll let you on the show with that. Please do. Here we have a fatality here. This was in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. This was released today, March 4th. Let's do a share screen on this. U.S. Department of Labor cites Florida air conditioning contractor for exposing workers who struck by hazards after a worker fatality, right? All right. The U.S. Department of Labor has cited Florida plumbing, heating, and air conditioning contractor for exposing workers who struck by hazards after an employee suffered a fatal injury at a Bal Harbour Shops work site in August 2025. Department's OSHA found that on August 28th, the HVAC Incorporated HVAC Incorporated pipe fitter installing a new air conditioning system for a mall expansion construction project was fatally injured from a pressurized HVAC piping system. The employer was cited with two serious violations for exposing workers to struck by hazards by not verifying piping was free from stored pressure, meaning it had to be depressurized before employees performed work on the system, and did not train workers to recognize and avoid hazards associated with removing HVAC end caps. So from what I can see here, just based on this article, this worker might have gotten hit with the air pressure and fallen backwards and had a secondary injury, fallen on the floor, struck a head, or he might have been hit with an end cap. Right, I've seen these types of things go down either way. One accident I investigated, somebody did this, and there was an explosive thing in there that blew him up in the air and against the wall, and he ended up crushing the back of his head and bleeding out. That was one way. And another one was, I didn't investigate this, but I did read the accident report many years ago, where somebody had a similar situation to this. HVAC system was pressurized, and the end cap right? He was standing in front of the end cap when it went off and it hit him in the chest, and ended up killing him. Not a good thing. With that, blows to the chest, very dangerous. That's why they have little leaguers wear chest protectors. Some of the big leaguers do too, with the chest protectors. With that, we're going to head on over to the EPA website and see what the hell they have going on over there. Environmental Protection Agency. And again, where are we getting this stuff? Here we have the news releases. These are all government news releases. EPA marks cleanup success at four Superfund sites in the Southeast region. The U.S. EPA is proposing to leave from the NPL, National Priorities List, four Superfund sites. Add to stream. Right, Superfund site, not Superfund. Sometimes they are fun. The EPA worked closely with state and local partners who best understand the needs of their communities to revitalize these blighted properties and help turn them into economic engines that will help power the great American comeback. Proposing the deletion of four sites from the NPL is the result of hard work by many people at EPA and our partners on the ground, as well as a commitment. What are those funds, right? Miami Drum Services, the EPA placed this 1.2-acre site on the NPL in 1983 because of contaminated soil and groundwater. I think, this is from Miami, Florida, I think there were old training movies done on this one, if memory serves me right. The Pepper Steel Alloys Incorporated from Medley, Florida, though through cleanup and contaminated soil and other actions by the EPA, FDEP, local partners, and potentially responsible parties, PRPs, this 25-acre site does not currently pose a threat to people living and working nearby. It's been on there since 1984. Diamond Shamrock Corporation in Cedartown, Georgia. I've heard of this. I've read about this over the years. EPA placed this site on the NPL in 1990 due to contaminated groundwater resulting from the disposal of waste oil and other waste products from chemical manufacturing operations. And this one, Caldwell Lace Leather Company in Auburn, Kentucky. EPA placed this 57-acre site on the NPL in 1990 because of contaminated groundwater and soil resulting from waste here. And here's the backman, of course. We've got to give Trump his due. The Trump EPA is committed to improving the Superfund program in support of our commitment to invigorating the economy while protecting human health. Returning contaminated lands to productive use faster supports Trump EPA's core pillars of clean land and air and water for every American. EPA is laser-focused on modernizing Superfund to turn unsafe areas into parks, homes, and businesses to help power the great American comeback. Deleting a site from the NPL illustrates Superfund cleanup success. It signals to communities that no further cleanup is required to protect human health or the environment. Years and sometimes decades of complex investigation and cleanup work have gone into getting sites where they are today. While EPA encourages site reuse through the cleanup process, deleting a site from the NPL can revitalize communities, raise property values, and promote economic growth by signaling potential developers and financial institutions that cleanup is complete. Now, let me point out some things for you here with this. These are old sites, from the 80s and 90, right? 93, in that era. Many, many, many administrations at this point manage these sites. We're on the tail end of things. Now, the final decision as to whether removing the NPL or not, that goes to the current administration, my understanding. However, a lot of effort went into this stuff. And again, I like to see this happen here. This sort of sites, return to the community and being cleaned up. And this is happening more and more because, why? These sites take many, many years to clean up with this stuff. And, right? Let's see what next. EPA launched this initiative to strengthen support for water systems and maximize impact to ensure clean, safe water for all. EPA launched this initiative to strengthen support for water systems. On March 4th, 2026, U.S. EPA launched the Real Water Technical Assistance Initiative to back to basics approach to support drinking water. In a memorandum, EPA Assistant Administrator for Water, Jess Kramer, the agency issued a call to action to align all technical assistance for drinking water and wastewater systems with tried and true services such as engineering and design expertise. Right, the goals of the Real Water TA focus on public workforce development and financial management. The goals of the Real Work TA force focus on public health and compliance with the Safe Drinking Water Act and Clean Water Act. Listen, right? So what are they doing here? Support returning to and maintaining compliance, focus on traditional and innovative water infrastructure, define the scope of technical assistance, strengthen technical, managerial, and financial management, empower the water workforce. I've never heard of that before, water workforce. Improve financial readiness and access to financial assistance and reduce inefficient costs and drive real-world results. And everybody gives themselves the proverbial back slap on this one. Attaboy, attagirl, right? And here we go. Another success at the Roe Industries groundwater contamination site. Another one, EPA marks cleanup successes at two Superfund sites in Illinois. EPA is proposing to lead the Kerr McKee Crest Creek. And this one in West Chicago, Illinois. And the Marshall Plan Superfund site in Marshall, Illinois, from the NPL. Another one. They're just leading into things off the NPL all over the place. The Corozal Wells Superfund site in Puerto Rico. And we have, and there was one story on here. We talked about that last night. Talked about that last night with the EPA uncovering government subcontractor analysts altering measurements. The other one was on Safety Clean in Linden, New Jersey. And the Tijuana River, we talked about that with the cleanup. We'll talk about all. Now, here we have one of them. EPA Administrator Zeldin surveys Potomac Interceptor collapse site. Here, let's see if we can get this on the air. Hold on.
Something very big happened a week ago. Was that the D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser contacted the White House, asked for help. President Trump was happy to oblige. And now when I was there on the ground watching Army Corps finishing up a pipeline in a matter of days to help with stormwater flow and a lot of other work with resources, bandwidth, expedited timelines, we still have questions, yes. But right now we're just looking to do everything
Now, if you were able to hear that at all, they're worried about those America 250 celebrations. Right? We got to get this cleaned up for America. Imagine that. I'm sure they're going to have some water celebrations out there. Imagine that. Here comes a nice boat. Here it comes. Don't get near the water. You're going to get sick. There's sewage in that water. We're going to go to commercial break. And we will come back with you to you great people here.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamer emers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives in some information that you might be interested in.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Bozell, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Bozell and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Bozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
Is your safety check?
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
Yes, and we are back. That was, again, all the music on here is royalty-free, or we own it. I mean, we just, we're doing soft release on some additional music, Safety Love songs. We're waiting for it to come up on Apple Music to really share it, but we are on Spotify. We are on a couple of other platforms. There are Safety Warriors, Safety Love Songs. You've heard a couple of them here. We had our Valentine's Day show. And yes, I'm going back and forth on here to make sure we get things going. Why are we talking about this book here? Right, go back to page 30 here. Simple Sabotage Field Manual. This was declassified in April of 2008. Here. And it's amazing that this was classified for how many years here? 60 years after they wrote it. I mean, we heard about things here all along. This is from January 1944. And this was written by the OSS, who was the forerunner of the Central Intelligence Agency in the United States. And what we, and this is studied. I mean, it's like I think I was saying here before. Let's say you have an organization, you're dealing with difficult people. We talked about dealing with difficult people all along here. We have the Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals that we discussed. We talked about Hare's Psychopathic Checklist. Very shortly, we're going to be talking about this book, Dangerous Personalities by Joe Navarro. And he has multiple checklists here on How about dangerous personalities? What do you look for? And he was an FBI guy also. We've also had I Know You're Lying, where we discussed a book that was written by one of the people who detected lying for the U.S. Marshals Service and did training out there for the government law enforcement on how to conduct interviews. When you're talking to people, it's critical if you're a safety professional to know whether you're being deceived or not. There are certain things. So on this one, we're talking about simple sabotage. Maybe you don't realize, you don't realize that you're doing it yourself. You're sabotaging your organization, your company. Maybe your company is being sabotaged itself. Well, what do you mean? Well, maybe you have labor issues, labor relation issues, things of that nature. How do you know? Well, we're going to talk about some of that here. And, you know, just sit back with your favorite beverage, right? No alcohol on this show. Yes, I have to say that. There is no alcohol because people sometimes get the wrong idea. Well, let's start going here. And let's see how well we could get this viewable for everybody. And, okay. Here we go. And this book goes into all the different ways you can sabotage, but we're starting on this one for at page 28. And this is a government document, non-copyrighted. General interference with organizations and production. Insists on doing everything through channels. Never permit shortcuts to be taken in order to expedite decisions. Make speeches. Talk as frequently as possible and at great length. Illustrate your points by long anecdotes and accounts of personal experiences. Never hesitate to make a few appropriate patriotic comments. So this was written for managers like Oscar Schindler and his people out there to lower production and to destroy the war effort. When possible, refer all matters to committees for further study and consideration. Attempt to make the committees as large as possible, never less than five. Bring up irrelevant issues as frequently as possible. This sounds like, you know, when you have union issues. I'm sorry. This is what it sounds like. Haggle over precise wordings of communications, minutes, and resolutions. That ever happen in one of your meetings? Refer back to matters decided upon at the last meeting and attempt to reopen the question of the advisability of that decision. That's a common one. Advocate caution. Be reasonable and urge your fellow conferees to be reasonable and avoid haste, which might result in embarrassments or difficulties later on. Be worried about the propriety of any decision. Raise the question of whether such action as is contemplated lies within the jurisdiction of the group or whether it might conflict with that policy of some higher echelon. I mean, I was dying laughing with some of these. This one goes out right to managers and supervisors. 1. Demand written orders. 2. Misunderstand those orders. Ask endless questions or engage in a long correspondence about such orders. Quibble over them when you can. Do everything possible to delay the delivery of orders. Even though parts of an order may already be ready beforehand, don't deliver it until it is completely ready. 4. Don't order new working materials until your current stocks have been virtually exhausted, so that the slightest delay in filling your order will mean a shutdown. Order high-quality materials, which are hard to get. If you don't get them, argue about it. Warn that inferior materials will mean inferior work. In making work assignments, always sign out the unimportant jobs first. See that the important jobs are assigned to inefficient workers of poor machines. Insist on perfect work in relatively unimportant products. Send back for refinishing those which have the least flaw. Approve other defective parts whose flaws are not visible to the naked eye. So send back the stuff that may be a little bit off, but approve the stuff that's really off. All right. Make mistakes in routing so that parts and materials will be sent to the wrong place in the plant. When training new workers, give incomplete or misleading instructions. To lower morale, and with it, production, be pleasant to inefficient workers. Give them undeserved promotions. Discriminate against efficient workers. Complain unjustly about their work. Hold conferences when there is more critical work to be done. Number 12, Iran. Multiply paperwork in plausible ways. Start duplicate files. Multiply the procedures and clearances involved in issuing instructions, paychecks, and so on. See that three people have to approve everything where one would do. Apply all regulations to the last letter. This one's for office workers. Make mistakes in quantities of material when you are copying orders. Confuse similar names. Use wrong addresses. Prolong correspondence with government bureaus. Misfile essential documents. And making carbon copies, right? You used to have carbon copies. You could Google what those are. Make one too few so that an extra copying job will have to be done. Tell important callers boss is busy or talking on another telephone. Hold up the mail until the next collection. Spread disturbing rumors that sound like inside dope. Here we go for employees. Work slowly. Think out ways to increase the number of movements necessary on your job. Use a light hammer instead of a heavy one. Try to make a small wrench do when a big run is necessary. Use little force where considerable force is needed, and so on. Contrive as many interruptions to your work as you can. When changing the material on which you are working, as you would on a lathe or a punch, take needless time to do it. If you are cutting, shaving, or doing other measured work, measure the dimensions twice as often as you need to. When you go to the lavatory, spend a longer time there than is necessary. Oh, yeah, that's a common one on a lot of my projects. Forget tools so that you will have to go back after them. Even if you understand the language, pretend not to understand instructions in a foreign tongue. Pretend that instructions are hard to understand and ask to have them repeated more than once. Or pretend that you are particularly anxious to do your work and pester the foreman with unnecessary questions. Do your work poorly and blame it on bad tools, machinery, and equipment. Complain that these things are preventing you from doing your job correctly. Never pass on your skill and experience to a new or less skillful worker. Snarl up administration in every possible way. Fill out forms illegibly so that they will not have to be done over. Make mistakes or omit requested information in forms. If possible, join or help organize a group for presenting employee problems to the management. See that the procedures adopted are as inconvenient as possible for the management, involving the presence of a large number of employees at each presentation, entailing more than one meeting for each grievance, bringing up problems which are large. I'm sorry, I knew I couldn't get through this without laughing. Bringing up problems which are largely imaginary, and so on. Misroute materials. Mix good parts with unusable scrap and rejected parts. General devices for lowering morale or in creating confusion. Give lengthy and incomprehensible explanations when questioned. Report imaginary spies or danger to the Gestapo or police. One of my favorite. Act stupid. Be as irritable and quarrelsome as possible without getting yourself into trouble. Misunderstand all sorts of regulations concerning such matters as rationing, transportation, traffic regulations. Complain against ersatz materials. In public, treat Axis Nationals or Quislings coldly. Stop all conversation. Oh, yeah. We could change that in as safety people, right? In public, treat safety people as quit or, right, coldly. Stop all conversation when safety people enter the cafe. Cry and sob hysterically at every occasion, especially when confronted by government clerks. Boycott all movies, entertainments, concerts, newspapers, which are in any way connected with the Quisling authorities. Do not cooperate in salvage schemes. Do not cooperate in salvage schemes. And that's some of it. Some of these things are pretty funny here with this, but isn't this what happens in a lot of our organizations here? When you, right, where you have this adversarial, you have this adversarial relationship with management, it makes things less safe. How about on the safety end? Where on the safety end, you add things that may or may not be necessary with that. Again, you have to have communication. Have to make sure everybody knows what the hell is going on. But at a certain point, there's a certain point of negative returns, I might say. With that, let's see what else. Since we have 12 more minutes here. All right. Motion pictures. Projector operators can ruin newsreels and many other enemy propaganda films by bad focusing, speeding up or slowing down the film, and causing frequent breakage in the film. Audiences can ruin enemy propaganda films by applauding to drown the words of the speaker, by coughing loudly, and by talking. Anyone can break up a showing of an enemy propaganda film by putting two or three dozen large moths in a paper bag. Take the bag to the movies with you, put it on the floor in an empty section of the theater as you go in, and leave it open. The moths will fly out and climb into the projector beam so that the film will be obscured by fluttering shadows. On radio, station engineers will find it quite easy to overmodulate transmissions of talks by persons giving enemy propaganda or instructions so that they will sound if they were talking through a hot heavy cotton blanket with a mouth full of marbles. In your own apartment building, you can interfere with radio reception at times when the enemy wants everyone to listen. Take an electric light plug off the end of an electric light cord. I'm not recommending this. Take some wire out of the cord and tie it across two terminals of a two-prong plug or three terminals of a four-prong plug. Then take it around and put it into as many wall and floor outlets as you can. Each time you insert the plug into a new circuit, you will blow out a fuse and silence all radios running on power from that circuit until a new fuse is put in. Damaging insulation on any electrical equipment tends to create radio interference in the immediate neighborhood, particularly on large generators, neon signs, fluorescent lighting, x-ray machines, and power lines. If workmen can damage insulation on a high-tension line near an enemy airfield, they will make ground-to-plane radio communications difficult and perhaps impossible during long periods of the day. Right? I don't recommend any of this stuff. Communications. Telephone. At an office, hotel, when it's... At office, hotel, and exchange switchboards, late putting enemy calls through. You used to have a switchboard operator there with wires and plugs. Give them wrong numbers, cut them off accidentally, or forget to disconnect them so that the line cannot be used again. Hamper official and especially military business by making at least one telephone call a day to an enemy headquarters. When you get them, tell them you have the wrong number. Call military or police offices and make anonymous false reports of fires, air raids, and bombs. In offices and buildings used by the enemy, unscrew the earphone of telephone receivers and remove the diaphragm. Electricians and telephone repairmen can make poor connections and damage insulation so that cross talk with other kinds of electrical interference will make conversations hard to understand. Put the batteries under automatic switchboards out of commission by dropping nails, metal filings, or coins in the cells. Again, with that. Now, there's another section here with this. Sabotage varies from highly technical coup de main, sets that require detailed planning and use of specifically trained operators to innumerable civil acts which the ordinary individual citizen saboteur can perform. This paper is primarily concerned with the latter type. Civil sabotage does not require specially prepared tools or equipment and is executed by an ordinary citizen who may or may not act individually and without the necessity for active connection with an organized group, and is carried out in such a way as to involve the minimum danger of injury, detection, and reprisal. Where destruction is involved, the weapons of the citizen saboteur are salt, nails, candles, pebbles, thread, or any other materials he might normally be expected to possess as a householder or as a worker in his particular occupation. His arsenal is the kitchen shelf, the trash pile, his own usual kit of tools and supplies. A second type of simple sabotage, right, requires no destructive tools whatsoever and produces physical damage, if any, by highly indirect means. It is based on universal opportunities to make faulty decisions, to adopt a non-cooperative attitude, and to induce others to follow suit. Making a faulty decision may be simply a matter of placing tools in one spot instead of another. A non-cooperative attitude may involve nothing more than creating an unpleasant situation among one's fellow workers, engaging in bickerings, or displaying surliness and stupidity. This type of activity, sometimes referred to as the human element, is frequently responsible for accidents, delays, and general obstruction, even under normal conditions. The potential saboteur should discover what types of faulty decisions and non-cooperation are normally found in his kind of work and should then devise his sabotage as to enlarge that margin of error. Right? Possible effects. Acts of civil sabotage are occurring throughout Europe, and efforts should be made to add to their efficiency. Lessen their detectability and increase the number. Acts of civil sabotage, multiplied by thousands of citizens, can be an effective weapon against the enemy. Slashing tires, draining fuel tanks, starting fires, starting arguments, acting stupidly, short-circuiting electrical systems, upgrading machine parts with waste materials, manpower, and time. Occurring on a wide scale, simple sabotage will be a constant and tangible drag on the war effort to the enemy. Simple sabotage may also have secondary results of more or less value. Widespread practice of simple sabotage will harass and demoralize enemy administrators and police. Further, success may embolden the citizen saboteur eventually to find colleagues who can assist him in sabotage of greater dimensions. Finally, the very practice of simple sabotage by natives in enemy or occupied territory may make these individuals identify themselves actively with the UN war effort and encourage them to assist openly in periods of Allied invasion. Motivating, right? To incite the citizen, motivating the saboteur. To incite the citizen to the active practice of simple sabotage and to keep him practicing that sabotage over sustained periods is a special problem. Simple sabotage is often an act which the citizen performs according to his own initiative and inclination. Acts of destruction do not bring him any personal gain, may be completely foreign to his habitual conservationist attitude toward materials and tools. Purposeful stupidity is contrary to human nature. He frequently needs pressure, stimulation, or assurance, and information and suggestions regarding feasible methods of simple sabotage. Right? And then they have this. This is a little bit complicated to go through, right? Again, with this section, since the effect of his own acts is limited, the saboteur may become discouraged unless he feels that he is a member of a large, though unseen, group of saboteurs operating against the enemy or the government in, of his own country or elsewhere. This can be conveyed indirectly. Suggestions which he reads and hears can include observations that a particular technique has been useful in this or that district. Even if the technique is not applicable to his surroundings, another success will encourage him to attempt similar acts. It also can be conveyed directly. Statements raising the effectiveness of simple sabotage can be contrived, which will be published by white radio, I mean like underground radio, freedom stations, and the subsurface subversive press. Estimates of the proportion of population engaged in sabotage can be disseminated. Instances of successful sabotage are already being broadcast by white radio and freedom stations. This should be continued and expanded. More important than A or B would be to create a situation in which the citizen saboteur acquires a sense of responsibility and begins to recruit others. Encouraging destructiveness. And it should be pointed out to the saboteur where the circumstances are suitable that he is acting in self-defense against the enemy or retaliating against the enemy for other acts of destruction. A reasonable amount of humor in the presentation of his suggestions for civil sabotage will relax tensions and fear. Right? The saboteur may have to reverse his thinking, and he should be told of this in so many words. Where he formerly thought of keeping his tools sharp, he should now let them grow dull. Surfaces that formerly were lubricated now should be sanded. Normally diligent, he should now be lazy and careless, and so on. Once he is encouraged to think backwards about himself and the objects of his everyday life, the saboteur will see many opportunities in his immediate environment which cannot possibly be seen from a distance. A state of mind should be encouraged that anything can be sabotaged. Among the potential citizen saboteurs who are to engage in physical destruction, two extreme types may be distinguished. On the one hand, there is the man who is not technically trained and employed. This man needs specific suggestions. On the other extreme is the man who is a technician, such as a lathe operator or automobile mechanic. Presumably, this man will be able to devise methods of simple sabotage which would be appropriate to his own situation. Right? But they have to reorient his thinking into sabotage. Various media may be used to disseminate things, right? With that. Safety measures. The amount of activity carried on by the saboteur will be governed not only by the amount of opportunities he sees, but also by the amount of danger he feels. Bad news travels fast, and civil sabotage will be discouraged if too many civil saboteurs are arrested. It should not be difficult to prepare leaflets and other media for the saboteur about the choice of weapons, time, and targets, which will ensure the saboteur against detection and retaliation. Right? Among such suggestions, so this is how you do it. Use materials which appear to be innocent. A knife or a nail file can be carried normally on your person, either as a multi-purpose instrument for creating damage, matches, pebbles, hair, salt, nails, and dozens of other destructive agents can be carried or kept on your living or in your living quarters without exciting any suspicion, whatever. If you are a worker in a particular trade or industry, you can easily carry and keep such things as wrenches, hammers, emery paper, and the like. Try to commit acts for which large numbers of people could be responsible. For instance, if you blow out the wiring in a factory and a central firebox, almost anyone could have done it. On the street, sabotage after dark, such as you might be able to carry out against a military guard truck, is another example of an act for which it will be impossible to blame you. Well, night vision goggles, I don't think that's going to work nowadays. Do not be afraid to commit acts for which you might be blamed directly, so long as you do so rarely, and as long as you have a plausible excuse. You dropped your wrench across an electrical circuit because an air raid had kept you up the night before and you were half dozing at work. Always be profuse in your apologies. Frequently you can get away with such acts under the cover of pretending. Well, you're going to love this, guys. Frequently you can get away with such acts under the cover of pretending stupidity, ignorance, overcaution, fear of being suspected of sabotage, or weakness and dullness due to undernourishment. After you have committed an act of easy sabotage, resist any temptation to wait around and see what happens. Loiterers arouse suspicion. Of course, there are circumstances when it would be suspicious for you to leave. If you commit sabotage on your job, you should naturally stay at your work. Tools, targets, and timing. The citizen saboteur cannot be closely controlled, nor is it reasonable to expect that civil sabotage can be precisely concentrated on specific types of target. According to the requirements of a concrete military situation, right? So adopt the sabotage, and here, under general conditions, simple sabotage is more than malicious mischief. It should always consist of acts whose results will be detrimental to the materials and manpower of the enemy. The saboteur should be ingenious in using his everyday equipment. All sorts of weapons will present themselves if he looks at his surroundings in a different light. For example, emery dust, a powerful weapon, right? You could use that for, with things. It may seem at first on a table, but if the saboteur were to pulverize an emery knife sharpener or emery wheel with a hammer, he would find himself a plentiful supply. The saboteur should never attack targets beyond his capacity and the capacity of the instruments. As an inexperienced person should not, for example, attempt to use explosives, but should confine himself to use of matches or other familiar weapons. And it goes on and on and on and on. Here, fires is a big one. And now, why are we going over this? A lot of times we sabotage or we get sabotaged and we unknowingly sabotage and all this other stuff. So guess what? I read this so you can recognize how you're sabotaging yourself. Maybe you see how your workers may be sabotaging you. And we're going to talk about, again, how your management might be sabotaging the situation. The so-called leaders. As a safety professional, you have to be better. You have to be better than the people you're managing, more knowledgeable than the people you're managing. I'm not saying better meaning you're a better person and look at me. I mean, you have to be able to recognize patterns. Don't assign motives, but you can recognize patterns. Motives are just like judgmental. You know one thing, you don't want to go, well, no, Frank is evil. No, this is the pattern that Frank is doing. Especially if you have to make a report of this somewhere. Well, what did you see? I saw Frank do X. I saw Frank do Y. I saw Frank do Z. Why would he do that? I don't know. I was speculative. But I do know he does X, Y, and Z. And this destroys our operation, destroys our safety management system and everything else. That's all I got for tonight. I didn't do a share screen on this one. Oh, well. I'm probably going to reshoot this section here and do this as a standalone video with this. And that's it. So have a great evening, everybody. I hope to be seeing you tomorrow night. That's Thursday, March 5th, and we will go from there. So for Safety Wars and the Safety FM Network, this is Jim Polzel. Good night.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
You got into the safety business because you wanted to protect people, but somewhere along the way, the job started controlling your time, your schedule, your priorities, even your income potential. What if the expertise you've built over the years in the field can give you something more? More freedom, more control, more ownership of your future. I'm Sheldon Primus, the author of 7 Steps to Starting a Profitable Safety Consulting Business and the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast. With more than 350 episodes helping safety professionals become consultants and grow their career. Consulting changed my life. In fact, I'm a full-time RVer and one consulting contract paid for my home I live in today. Now, I help safety professionals build their own consulting practice through bi-weekly coaching calls, accountability, and personal guidance. But this program isn't for everyone. Start with the consultant readiness audit at sheldon.coach.
What if everything we thought we knew about safety was just interference? From the host of the Rated R Safety Show and the founder of Safety FM comes the complete Signal Transmission Trilogy, now available in one powerful edition. Safety, in my opinion, the book that started the conversation. Safety Mutation, where the boundaries of culture, systems, and belief begin to break. And now, Safety Transmission, the final piece of the Signal. For the first time, all 3 books are together in one volume. The Signal Transmission Trilogy, complete edition. This isn't just about compliance. It's about consciousness. It's about decoding the way we think, lead, and live, inside and outside the system. Whether you've been following the Signal since the beginning or you're just now tuning in, this is the version to own. Search Signal Trilogy on Amazon or visit safetyfm.com to get your copy now.